This is Kindergarten Cop, and it is Wednesday, March 11th, 2026, and I will be reading from the Decatur Herald and Review, starting out with a local article titled "Man Gets Prison for Battery" by Tony Reed. The defendant called Kloss, who spent Christmas Day in the Macon County Jail, looks like he will be spending Christmas Day 2026 in a state prison cell. Carl Heinz Kloss III, 53, had been set to face a Macon County Circuit Court jury trial Monday on charges he beat and strangled his wife in their Decatur home on the evening of December 22nd, but the trial was scrubbed after Kloss opted to take a plea deal. He appeared in court March 6th and was sentenced to 2 years in prison after admitting a charge of aggravated battery causing great bodily harm. Presiding Judge Thomas Griffith then dismissed further charges accusing Kloss of aggravated domestic battery, two counts of battery, and one count of interfering with the reporting of domestic violence. A sworn affidavit about the case filed by the Decatur Police Department said Kloss appeared to wake up in a bad mood while his wife was watching a football game. He left the room to fix himself a snack and then heard his wife yelling in reaction to what was happening with the game. She said Carl came back into the living room and asked what she was yelling about, said Officer Joseph Oberheim, who signed the affidavit. She stated Carl began attacking her. She said that Carl said he was going to kill her. The victim said she had been repeatedly punched, slapped, and strangled before managing to flee outside. In addition to the prison sentence, the judge ordered Kloss to pay $250 to have his DNA added to a criminal database maintained by the state police. This article is titled "Police: One Hurt After Robbery" by Tony Reed. Police said they found Rusty J. Simpson's robbery victim covered in blood after he was hacked in the head by a sword wielded by the Decatur defendant. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said the 53-year-old victim was targeted because he lives with Simpson's sister, and Simpson discovered he had just received a Social Security check and had $2,000 in cash. The affidavit says the victim told police Simpson, 45, had walked into his home in the 1700 block of North Church Street on the afternoon of February 25th and confronted him as he lay on a mattress. The victim said he observed Rusty to have a 9mm handgun, which he held to the victim's head, said Officer Brad Saul, who signed the affidavit. Rusty demanded he give him all his money. The victim said Simpson had a male accomplice who tried to grab him, but he kicked the man away. That was when he said Simpson picked up a gold-handled sword that the victim kept in his bedroom and attacked him with it. Rusty started swinging the sword at him, striking him approximately 3 times in his head, Saul stated in the affidavit. Rusty pointed his firearm at him again and told him to give him the money. The victim said he told Simpson to take the cash, and the defendant also helped himself to jewelry and other valuables worth another $1,000. Saul said when police arrived to speak to the victim, they found his head, face, and hand to be covered in blood. Saul added, officers observed the victim to have several lacerations on top of his head, a small laceration on his right eyebrow, and a laceration to his right hand, which were all actively bleeding. Officers observed blood droplets all around the mattress and floor. The victim needed hospital treatment, and police found and arrested Simpson on March 2nd. He has been denied pretrial release and is jailed on charges of inflicting aggravated battery with a deadly weapon and aggravated robbery with a firearm. And now an article on Lakeland College. Board approves tuition increase. Lakeland president, tuition still below planned hikes at other community colleges, by Rob Stroud. The Lakeland College Board of Trustees has approved a 3.25% tuition increase for the 2026-2027 academic year, an increase that is reportedly below the rate of inflation and the state average for community colleges. The 8-member board voted unanimously Monday evening to approve the tuition recommendation made by Lakeland's administration. In-district tuition will increase by $5 per credit hour under the new rates, while per-credit hour fees will remain unchanged, bringing the total per-credit hour cost to $159. Lakeland President Josh Bullock said, "For an in-district student taking a standard full-time course load of 30 credit hours in the 2026-2027 academic year, the total tuition and fee cost will be $4,770. This is an increase of $150 over the previous year." Bullock said, "While Lakeland's tuition and fees have increased by 9.9% since 2020, the rate of inflation has increased by 26.3% during his same time frame. Although our tuition and fees will be going up, we are still far below the rate of inflation," Bullock said. "Lakeland College remains an affordable education option for our students, which is exactly what we want to ensure we are accessible to everybody." In addition, Bullock said Lakeland's tuition and fee increase for 2026-2027 is below the planned hikes that have been reported by approximately 27 other community colleges in Illinois. Bullock said the average increase among those other colleges is $3.58 for tuition alone, plus an additional $4.25 per credit hour in student fees. "We will still remain below where most of our peers are for tuition and fees," Bullock said. Student trustee Jay Blyler of Taylorville was among those who voted for the tuition and free recommendation. Blyler said he and the Student Government Association supports this increase under the understanding that no single student group will take the hit on a dramatic increase. Blyler said the tuition increase is going to be spread out evenly across the student body. The student trustee said he feels this increase is something people can budget for as they plan their higher education. "It's necessary if we are still going to still give the high quality education that Lakeland is known for, but also at an affordable price," Blyler said. Lakeland has reported that it offers a comprehensive textbook rental service included in the tuition and fees, which saves each student up to $1,400 per year on books and course materials. The college also has reported that the Lakeland Foundation awards more than $500,000 in student scholarships every year, with an estimated 81% of students receiving financial assistance. While the new rates will keep student fees at $35 per credit hour, the board approved reallocating $1.50 of the recreational fee to the college's service fee to support a new academic equipment fund to be used for state-of-the-art classroom and lab equipment. The new tuition rate will take effect with the summer 2026 semester and continue through the fall 2026 and spring 2027 terms. And this article is accompanied by a photo of Lakeland College student Connor Garifano of Mattoon, who is rinsing out a cylinder Monday afternoon in a newly renovated lab in the Northwest building. The tuition increase that the Lakeland Board of Trustees approved Monday evening aimed at helping the college to continue supporting and enhancing its academic services for students. An article from Public Safety, Shelbyville Camper Fire Victim Identified by Donette Beckett. The name of the woman who died as the result of a camper fire at a campground in Shelbyville has been released. The Shelby County Coroner, Beth DeBolt, said Amber L. Fixall Binkley, 44, was pronounced dead after her body was found inside the fire-damaged camper Thursday afternoon in the Robin Hood Woods Campground. DeBolt said Fixall Binkley's last address was in Springfield, but she had been working in the Shelbyville area. According to a news release issued by the Shelby County Sheriff Department, the Shelbyville Fire Department, along with the Sheriff's Department, were dispatched to the fire in the campground Thursday afternoon. After the fire was extinguished, firefighters discovered the body of an adult female inside the camper, the release said. An investigation into Fixall Binkley's death and fire are ongoing. And now for news in brief. Eisenhower Sr. lauded for poetry reading. Decatur Eisenhower High School senior Jillian Garcia was a finalist in the recent statewide Poetry Out Loud competition. Garcia recited The Wanderer by Amin Rahani, An Apology by Julia Ward Howe, and Medusa by Louise Bogan in the competition. Students memorize and recite their poems and are judged based on presentation, poise, body language, and recitation skills, engaging with the audience and correct pronunciation, pace, and rhythm. Garcia was a regional winner prior to moving on to the state finals. This year marks the 21st anniversary of Poetry Out Loud. More than 2,900 students and nearly 100 teachers from 31 high schools took part in this year's Poetry Out Loud program in Illinois. The event was established in 2005 to help students improve public speaking skills, build confidence, and grow their appreciation for poetry. This year's theme was focused on the 250th anniversary of the United States, and students were encouraged to choose poems based on the country's history and culture. Josiah Queen added to Devon lineup. Christian music artist Josiah Queen, along with special guests Strings and Heart, have been added to the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater's list of 2026 concerts. The bands will be coming to the Nelson Park venue on July 11th. Tickets range from $45 to $79 and will go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday, March 13th at devonamphitheater.com. The show is not part of the 2026 Devon season ticket package. Josiah Queen became popular with hits such as The Prodigal and Dusty Bibles, as well as his most recent song, Can't Steal My Joy. The three brothers that make up Strings and Heart are known for their hit song, Flowers Dressed in Blue, and others, including Empty Airport. Lions Club fundraiser breakfast set, Warrensburg. The Warrensburg Latham Lions Club will hold its annual breakfast from 7 to 10 a.m. Saturday, March 14th at the Warrensburg United Methodist Church, 195 North Main Street. Tickets are $12 for those over the age of 12, $5 for children ages 3 to 12, and children under the age of 3 are free. The menu includes pancakes, sausage, eggs, and biscuits and gravy. Tickets are available from any Lions Club member and at the door. Proceeds are used to help local residents, including scholarships for Warrensburg Latham High School seniors and providing food and gift baskets at Christmas. Latest buzz on data centers. Environmental, utility, and other questions still remain as data center policies move forward, by Drew Zimmerman. Lincoln. As several Illinois counties seek to draft their own set of rules governing the construction of data centers, questions over factors such as noise, environmental impact, and utility rate increases persist. According to data from the International Energy Agency, U.S. data centers accounted for more than 4% of the country's total electricity consumption in 2024, and that figure is expected to more than double by 2030 due to an increased reliance on artificial intelligence. And with sales tax exemptions, employment credits, and other incentives, Illinois is a hotspot for new facilities. Lawmakers are seeking to address some public concerns through legislation, but some communities with hyperscale data center proposals in their own backyard are turning to outside contractors to provide answers. Last month, the Logan County Board agreed to a 60-day moratorium on applications for data centers, including a proposal for a 500-megawatt facility on a 200-acre site near Latham that is estimated to bring 1,500 construction jobs and another 200 full-time jobs. Representatives of Hut 8, the Miami-based digital infrastructure provider behind the project, have estimated the $5 billion project could generate up to $65 million in property tax revenue annually. Originally presented as a 90-day moratorium, Logan County Board Member Michael DeRoss said Hut 8 officials considered that long of a delay to be a deal-breaker for the project. Hut 8's proposal has received a largely negative response from members of the public who have been attending recent public meetings and presentations related to the project. Residents have been critical of the project's impact on their property tax and utility bills. Similar concerns have also caused significant resistance to a data center project on the 1,000-acre Ludican Farm property in Pekin. During Logan County's 60-day window, it was recommended that the county hire an outside consultant to address some of these unresolved issues. DeRoss said the United Counties Council of Illinois and the Greater Peoria Economic Development Council recommended the county hire Mark Pruitt, the same Indiana-based consultant who recently performed a study on a $500 million data center proposal in Sangamon County. A study like Sangamon's looks at pros and cons and presents in a way that's unbiased, DeRoss said. It was suggested that Pruitt be hired for $250 an hour in an amount not to exceed $10,000. However, questions were raised by board members about his ability to evaluate environmental impacts of data centers. As of Friday, DeRoss said he hasn't heard from Pruitt about whether he can address environmental concerns. Hut 8's proposal was touted for its closed-loop cooling system, which uses a fixed volume of coolant that would be shipped into the community. The only locally sourced water needed for the project would be for basic plumbing fixtures, which are estimated to use less than 9,000 gallons a day. Under proposed zoning regulations that currently are under county review, a data center shall provide a minimum 7 days advance notice to the county zoning office, township supervisor, and county health department of any intent to discharge coolant from a closed-loop cooling system. The developer must provide a detailed description of the need for discharge, the method for discharge, and the methods of disposal, including copies of necessary permits, manifests, and certifications, if required, by any other agency of local, state, or federal government agencies. DeRoss said the latest draft of the data center regulations requires the applicant to provide the county with certificates of insurance for environmental liability coverage. The amount of the policy would be determined by a qualified professional appointed by the county. Clinton Dresden Power plants to receive $370 million investment after 20-year renewal. The amended regulations also would require decommissioning procedures and timelines if the facility ceases operations. A bond or certified letter of credit would be issued to the county in the amount of the estimated costs. A violation of any provision of this chapter may be punishable by a civil penalty of not more than $50,000 for the first offense and $100,000 for the second offense. Any third or subsequent offense shall be subject to a civil penalty of $200,000 and referral to the county board. Repeated offenses may result in the revocation of the special use permit. Last month, Sangamon County's Zoning Board of Appeals recommended a data center proposal from Dallas-based CyrusOne without opposition. The project's zoning plan is expected to come before the Sangamon County Board for a full vote later this month. From McLean County, McLean County's Zoning Board of Appeals on Tuesday recommended modified zoning regulations for data centers that would limit their placement to manufacturing areas. Leah Klein, chair of the county's Land Use and Transportation Committee, said a data center ordinance passed by the county board in October only sought to provide definitions for a data center and require any such construction to have a special use permit. A proposed data center shall also comply with the noise limits established by the Illinois Pollution Control Board. After the meeting, Klein said she held a series of work groups with fellow work members to refine these zoning changes. One of the key takeaways from these meetings was that data centers are not a single uniform type of development. There are smaller modular facilities that are necessary for businesses like State Farm and services like a 911 call center, two of which already exist in Bloomington. There are also large-scale operations such as the ones proposed in Logan and Sangamon counties. The intent is to require applicants to clearly document the impacts of their specific proposal and to give this board and ultimately the county board the ability to evaluate each project on its own terms based on its size, technology, location, and infrastructure demands, Klein said. Although Logan County's data center project would sit on agriculturally zoned land, McLean County's ordinance would limit data center applications to sites zoned for manufacturing. That change reflects concerns about land use compatibility and the preservation of agricultural areas in practical terms, Klein said. This amendment prohibits the siting of large-scale AI farms or similar facilities in agriculturally zoned areas of the country. Legislative impacts. In Springfield, legislation seeks to create comprehensive environmental, water, and energy regulations for large-scale data centers. Under Senate Bill 4016, which is also known as the Power Act, data centers would be subject to cumulative impact assessments, public notice, and community benefits agreements. Non-disclosure agreements would be prohibited, and water source planning, quarterly water usage reporting, water scarcity plans, and water impact permits subject to public hearings and renewal every 5 years would be mandated. The goal is to reduce these projects' impact to the climate, water, and utilities while also holding tech companies responsible for paying for their own power infrastructure, the legislation's supporters have said. DeRoss said during a conference call with other county officials, representatives of Ameren confirmed that any transmission upgrades needed for Hut 8's project would be on the developer and not the consumer. He added that any possible negation of incentives would not stop Hut 8 from proceeding if the project were approved by the county board. However, one bill that was drafted to help convince the Chicago Bears to keep the team in Illinois could give local governments flexibility in negotiating property tax payments with mega developments, which could include large-scale data centers. The legislation would freeze property tax assessments on the site of such projects, and a payment in lieu of taxes program would be negotiated with the developers. DeRoss said his understanding of the bill is that the taxing bodies would meet and decide how much property owners are to pay, which provides some latitude for change. It's not as if we're freezing the whole thing and nobody is getting an extra dime unless we choose not to get an extra dime, DeRoss said. Now turning to local sports in boys basketball, Mount Zion Shuring part ways. Dale Schuring resigned as Mount Zion boys basketball head coach, Braves athletic director Diane Durbin confirmed Monday morning. In seven seasons with the Braves, Schuring compiled a 127-89 record. He led Mount Zion to the 2024 state tournament, where it finished fourth, and won another regional title in 2025. Coming off strong 2024 and 2025 seasons, the Braves finished this season 10-21 with a young core. Schuring ends his time with Mount Zion as the school's third longest tenured coach, according to the IHSA website. Mount Zion is accepting applications for the opening. Continuing in boys basketball, we gave it all we had. MacArthur falls inches short from state tournament by Will Foley from Springfield. All 3,114 sets of eyes inside the Bank of Springfield Center were tracking Kamir Carson's last-second heave. The ever-so-enamored tan leather ball hung in the air, seemingly for eternity, after Carson somehow rose it past 6'3" Alex Johnson. Time had already expired. This was it. The ball first touched the top right corner of the white painted square on the backboard, then ricocheted into the front of the rim. Had the ball then been a fraction closer toward the basket, it would have likely rolled in. The shot missed. East St. Louis 51, MacArthur 49. Millimeters made the difference in further history after the record-setting Generals had already done what the city hadn't seen in a long time, ever, at MacArthur. The battle was ferocious and one for the ages. The Generals had no words. They had laid it all on the line. "Our boys, we gave it all we had," head coach Therese Bryson said. "I'm at a loss for words. It hurts." Headlined by 6'8" Penn State commit Jamison White, the Flyers towered over the Generals. The nationally recognized name of East St. Louis alone is enough to strike fear into most opponents. But these Generals weren't most. White swarmed and swatted every ball in his vicinity, which took up the entire paint early on. However, MacArthur started to settle in by moving the ball around more and finishing craftily at the rim. The Generals thought that they had a three-point lead after one quarter, but White put in a ridiculous 35-footer off one leg, sending a message. The second and third-ranked teams in 3A traded buckets throughout the second quarter, but foul trouble piled up for the Generals. Kendall Howell picked up his third foul a couple of minutes into the period. Carson picked up two in the first quarter. Then Tashawn Clemens did the same in the second. Still, MacArthur only trailed by a point at halftime, 24-23. Then the Flyers started to roll. More foul trouble between Carson and Clemens meant East St. Louis attacking the rim persistently and scoring easily. Missed opportunities and cold shooting set in for MacArthur. The Flyers grabbed a game-high 9-point lead shortly before the end of the quarter. Once again, most teams would crumble to the mighty Flyers in the given circumstances. And once again, this group of Generals showed why, like all season, they're not most. Despite Clemens' fourth foul earlier in the frame, he stayed in and scored a layup halfway through to cut the deficit to 4 points. Howell then fouled out, but the Generals continued to chip away. With 3 minutes to go, Sean Lee drilled a corner three to tie it. Lee had grinded all night and all season. All year, he sacrificed for the team and gritted through an injury, and all night, he'd hustled and worked to keep up with White down low, despite his smaller 6'4" frame. "I can't do nothing but thank Sean Lee," Bryson said. "He came out there and gave us everything he had this whole year, man. I love that kid. That kid put in a whole lot of work for me for the last 4 years." Fewer than 90 seconds later, Tylan Cook cleaned up a miss at the rim to take a 2-point lead. The BOS center was in full pandemonium.